I've got Iron Man. I've got feedback. And I've got a blog post about the top 10 things you don't want to do in podcasting. It's The Adventures of Indiana Jim, Episode 9, for the week of May 23rd, 2008. It's Balticon weekend!
And now, coming to you not exactly live from
the Cliffs of Insanity,
a man who needs no introduction, that international man of geekery, that intrepid arch-geekologist, Indiana Jim.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. John Smarr. I'm going to be seeing John Smarr this weekend at Balticon. But I don't want to talk about Balticon just yet. I'm going to save that for the end of the program. I hope that you have had a chance to download this episode and put it on your iPods for the trip to Baltimore, Maryland, if you're going. We're going to have a fun time. It seems to be the place to be if you are a podcaster and you're near the East Coast area. And some folks that aren't necessarily near the East Coast area are also going to be there. Sad enough to say, none of the principals of Farpoint Media are going to be there, nor is Evoterra, but still, fun will ensue. Where are we going first? Preliminary thoughts about Indiana Jones 4. There are a bunch of us that tentatively have planned to see the Sunday matinee, hopefully, early afternoon to mid-afternoon of Indiana Jones 4. I will be seeing it tomorrow night with my wife, and Rich Siegfried is seeing it now. So lucky him, right? You know, two sides to this coin. Obviously, the first is, holy crap, Indiana Jones is back. The other side of that coin is the coin that dropped when The Phantom Menace showed up. Now, most of you who've been listening to the show know that I really don't have a big problem with The Phantom Menace. Yes, I see where there were problems. Plenty of problems. But on balance, I don't think the problems outweigh what was good. And I've talked about that before. If you want to hear it, you can go back to the Star Wars extravaganza episodes where I talked about it there. Or I can replay it for you if enough people ask me for it. But what was I saying? I actually am of the opinion that The Phantom Menace was the best of the three. I thought Jake Lloyd's performance as 9-year-old Anakin was better than Hayden Christensen's performance as 15-year-old or 21-year-old or whatever Anakin that he was playing later on. I didn't think the Yippee was too bad for a 9-year-old kid, but we'll just kind of let that one go. My personal opinion about Indy 4 is it's going to be awesome. I don't care that some of the reviewers are going, oh, too much CGI, you know. That's the day and age in which we live. And I didn't hear anyone complain about all the CGI in the Lord of the Rings movies. There's still plenty of stunts, but there's, you know, plenty of work for Industrial Light and Magic, it looks like, from the trailers. I don't have as much of a problem with that as some people. There's a lot of reviews that seem to think that this was, well, the Spielberg and Lucas have gotten silly. Well, it sounds like Monty Python, Graham Chapman. It's silly. We'll have no more of the silliness here. Yeah, well, hello. Indiana Jones wears a fedora and a leather jacket in the middle of the Amazon. Come on, people. Raiders of the Lost Ark didn't take itself seriously. He drank down his sorrows with a frickin' monkey. Okay? Do we love it? Yes, because that's Indiana Jones. It harkens to the 30s adventure serials. One of the other things I saw in the reviews was that, there's too much. Well, either there's too much action or there's too much dialogue. I can't tell which is which. They say either, oh, there's too much action, so there's no character development, or they say, oh, there's ponderous dialogue, so we don't get to the fun. It's like, the negative reviews seem to run the gamut on which one they think, and they can't seem to think consistently across the board. I have not read any of them in detail, so do not worry. No spoilers here. No spoilers. No spoilers, I swear. So my point is, in the adventure serials, it went from one death trap to another, from one action set piece to another. If you recall Raiders of the Lost Ark, after Indiana Jones is captured, after they get the Ark, and oh, the Nazis and Belloc show up, well, guess what? Action set piece, snakes and a nearly airtight crypt from which they escape. What happens next? Oh, big fight at an airplane. Oh, what happens after that? Oh, chasing down a truck. Okay, three big action set pieces. Sorry for popping there, but three action set pieces right up against each other with little to no dialogue. Now, come on. This is what Indiana Jones is all about. It's all about hair-raising things. Now, Indiana Jones, wow, Harrison Ford is in his 60s, okay? He can't do near as much as he did when he was 35 filming Raiders of the Lost Ark, or 36. He was 36 filming Raiders of the Lost Ark. Give the guy a break. It's been 30 years. You know, he didn't do as much in The Last Crusade, it having been 19 years from there. You know, Raiders, let himself be drug along behind a truck. He's not going to do that at 65 years old. Yeah, he still does some, you know, legitimate stunt work, but come on, let's be realistic. So my preliminary thoughts is I go in with no expectations other than it's Harrison Ford beating the crap out of bad guys, and it's going to harken back to those 30s adventure serials. It's going to harken back to the Maltese Falcon, and it's going to harken back to the Treasure of the Sierra Madre. It's going to be an adventure movie. It's supposed to be an adventure movie. So go out and have an adventure. These reviewers, I think, wanted to take it too seriously. And the same thing people did with Star Wars, but we won't get into that. Next part, Iron Man. Oh, ho, ho. After Superman and Batman, Iron Man was my favorite of the comic book heroes. Batman and Superman only because of saturation. Really, Superman because of the Christopher Reeve movies. After that, I thought Iron Man just looked really cool. And, you know, I'm not much for the canon of Iron Man, for the tradition of Iron Man. I didn't really read the comics as a kid. But, man, did they ever seem to get it right. They really did. The action was superb. Special effects were not too over the top for a guy flying in a steel suit, shooting blasts of energy, thermonuclear in nature, it seemed, at people. Other than that, not too far-fetched at all. But boy, the music was perfect. Kind of a Lacuna Coil rock sort of soundtrack. The dialogue was absolutely perfect everywhere. Jeff Bridges, freaking amazing as the main villain. I mean, there's not really much you can say about Iron Man. There weren't really too many holes, from my opinion. Spoiler alert here. Spoiler alert. There's one scene, spoiler alert here, where the military is chasing this mysterious object that just flew in and killed some terrorists and destroyed a tank, which was Iron Man, of course. So they don't know what it is. So, well, it's a weapon we've never seen. It's very small. It appears to be manned, you know. Well, the main black guy that got the commander of the unit in the building here, he says, well, let me make a call. And so he calls up Tony Stark. Spoiler alert. And his cell phone rings in his suit. And I just thought it was hilarious that his suit is equipped for hands-free wireless. It was classic. It was like this classic of comic book heroes with modern times. And just, of course, it fits. Why wouldn't he have a cell phone in there? So he's talking, hey, where are you? Oh, I'm driving with my top down. If you haven't seen it, you gotta see it. Spoiler alert done. Okay. Anyway, so I loved Iron Man. Every single minute of Iron Man I thought was good. The fight scene at the end, kind of, but I'm not really worried about that because the rest of the movie completely made up for it. And Jeff Bridges' performance was just fabulous. So I do like that. And finally, the podcast formerly known as Winging It, is Dragon Page Winging It, Mike Lenevo's Winging It, and Winging It 3D is no more. There's still content going to be coming through the feed, stuff we've never heard. I look forward to hearing some of it. But, you know, I'll say a few words here at the demise of Winging It. Now, Mike made it very clear that Winging It has been sucking his time, sucking his money. It takes a lot of work to clean up, to prepare for. He said, imagine throwing a big party at your house every Saturday. And he said, you know, it was just the show was sucking the life out of him. And I think, honestly, the show had the life sucked out of it. And I really do think that you can trace it back to the fact that Evo was no longer on the show. For whatever reason, it was his personality, in my opinion, that really made the humor work. As I said in my interview with Rich Siegfried, it was that Evo was kind of the geek who could be self-deprecating about geekdom, you know, effectively. His humor was sharp, his humor was biting, and his humor was immediate, and it was always funny, at least in my opinion. Now, a lot of people say, well, some people like the early show, some people like the later show. The personality was sucked out of the show. The repartee between Evo and Mike was one of the things that made Winging It work, and I think Slice of Sci-Fi suffers from it, because it's almost like the remaining crew takes the sci-fi almost too seriously. It's like without Evo, the ability to poke fun at our own geekdom is gone, and it seems the remaining cast take it a little too seriously. And it's not that they do a bad job, it's not what it once was. And maybe it is a taste thing. Maybe it is a taste thing, but as far as Winging It, it's all about the humor. And granted, plenty of stuff was funny. Plenty of episodes were funny on the new Winging It. I will give them that much, you know? But like Mike says, it sucked the life out of him. And whenever you're having the life sucked out of you by something, it shows, whether you want it to or not. Whether you still think it's good or not. And you know, I'm sorry to see it end the way it did. But, you know, in the end, it's a good thing. It's a good thing for Mike because it means Mike gets to do more. He gets his weekend back, which just, you know, for the sake of Mike's own sanity, it's a very good thing. So, you know, with that being said, it's time to take a break. We're going to come back with some feedback from my friend Jack Jaffe, Trucker Overdrive, and we will return, if I can get the stuff to work, we'll return in just a short minute or two.
Welcome to the wildest party in the universe. It's Twi'lek's Gone Wild.
Hi.
You will see these lovely creatures like you've never seen them before. See them all twirl their head tails just for you.
Ooh.
Partying, dancing, and getting absolutely crazy. Whether alien or humanoid, you must be over 18 seasons to order this wild video.
Okay.
It's 45 credits, and if you order now, we will throw in Twi'lek Spring Break on Naboo absolutely free. Please allow 4 to 6 weeks delivery for the Outer Rim territories. Call 555-1138. That's 555-1138. Order now.
Cool.
The President of the United States is dead. He was murdered in the morning sunlight by a 4-year-old boy. So began J.C. Hutchins' Seventh Son Patio Book Trilogy, the most popular podcast novel series in history. Last December, the trilogy concluded. The heroes were triumphant, or so we think. But now, it's time to go back and reveal moments in the Seventh Son story that were merely hinted at in the original trilogy. Welcome to Seventh Son Obsidian. J.C. Hutchins has opened up his Seventh Son universe and invited the seven biggest names in podcast fiction to chronicle a nationwide blackout that rocked America during the Seventh Son trilogy. Seventh Son Obsidian features short stories from these award-winning and nominated authors: Michael A. Stackpole, Scott Sigler, T. Morris, Mer Lafferty, Matt Wallace, Mark Yoshimoto Nemkov, and Christiana Ellis. And even more tales from these trailblazing podcast entertainers: Evo Terra, Dan Klass, Wichita Rutherford, George Prom, TD0013, Soccer Girl, and the cast of the radio adventures of Dr. Floyd. Obsidian also features dozens of audio and video recordings, stories of the blackout as told by its victims, created by Seventh Son fans across the globe. On May 31st, the lights go out. America becomes a police state. Because when the power fails, chaos reigns. Subscribe now to Seventh Son Obsidian or catch up with the original Seventh Son trilogy experience at jchutchins.net.
All right, so we're back. And if you remember 3 or 4 weeks ago, Jack Jaffe, Trucker Overdrive, sent in some comments about promotion. And after my comments, he sent in...
Forgive me, Wapo.
No, not that
I know
part.
That I...
Wrong button.
Do not have and yours.
Shut up. He sent in these comments.
Okay, Jim, you're right. You can't record art. Unless it's music. Hey, this is Trucker Overdrive. I'm really glad you got some donations and stuff. And, hey, thanks for playing that little bit, which I sent in. Actually, as a result of it, I got contacted by one of your listeners, Chris Moody, who does a books review podcast, and I'm going to get interviewed by him sometime. Anyway, it's opened up doors, man, and you got to realize that in podcasting, okay, so what if you're not, like, reaching 1,000 frickin' people? You're making a difference. You've made a difference for me just by, like, playing that frickin' file and stuff, and you made a difference for Moody because Moody's like looking for people to interview. So, you know, I mean, yeah, we're all just little cogs in the machine, but so what? You know, you gotta enjoy doing podcasts for doing podcasts and getting the replies back from people, because in the end, that's all there is.
Thank you for sending that in, dude. That was very apropos, and you're absolutely right. Part of what I do, part of my shtick, is self-deprecating humor, and it's pretty much the only thing I do that's funny, and that's make fun of myself. And it does come from a defense mechanism built in early, you know, in elementary school, early high school. Beat them to the laugh so they don't laugh at you. You laugh at yourself first. And really, you know, it's all about self-deprecating humor. It's, you know... I believe what you're saying. You know, I really do. And that's really cool that Chris found you through this and vice versa. And that's really what it's all about. It's this community thing. It's, you know, viral marketing. It's the 6 degrees of separation. And let me know when you find Kevin Bacon, would you? But really, you know, a lot of it, me making fun of myself, I don't really feel down on myself. But some people laugh about it, so, or not about it, but, you know, it makes people laugh. It's funny. Boy, I really thought your segment was longer, because I just played a promo, and we haven't gone very long talking about this. What to do? Oh, hey, I recently won a contest with Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing. It was funny. He had said, well, I have these two... Sean Farrell, who does Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing, he said, well, I have these books to give away, and all you have to do is leave a comment and on the blog this week naming the song and the artist of the ringtone of my cell phone that rang in the middle of last week's episode. So a week went by. And the next episode, he said, well, I had never got any comments about it. So I went, oh, I know what that is. It was Collective Soul singing something, Shine or Gel, or I don't know. I don't remember now. But anyway, I won these two books sent to me from Pyre. Pyre Books, which is a division of Prometheus Books, an imprint of Prometheus Books in Amherst, New York. It is Kay Kenyon. I got these two fine, fine-looking hardbacks, $25 hardbacks, and I'll do my own library segment. Pull quotes from, let's see, Greg Bear. Says, Kay Kenyon's Bright of the Sky is her richest and most ambitious novel yet. Fascinating, and best of all, three promises to be more to come. Or, there are promises to be more to come. Elise Marley, Kay Kenyon has created a dark, colorful, richly imagined world that works as both science fiction and fantasy. A classic space opera that recalls the novels of Dan Simmons. Who's that? I don't know. Titus Quinn bestrides Bright of the Sky in the great tradition of larger-than-life heroes. Excuse me. An engaging, romantic, unforgettable character. The stakes are high in this book. The character is memorable. The world complex and fascinating. A terrific story. Robert J. Sawyer says, Kenyon writes beautifully. Her characters are multi-layered and complex, and her extrasolar worlds are real and nuanced, while at the same time truly alien. And Sean Williams, author of The Crooked Letter and The Saturn Returns, says, Kay Kenyon takes the nuts and bolts of sci-fi and weaves pure magic around them. The brilliance of her imagination is matched only by the beauty of her prose. You should buy Bright of the Sky immediately. It's astounding. And just looking at about 450 pages of the first book, Bright of the Sky. The second book is A World Too Near. And this just means I'm going to have to buy the hardback of the third book. That's okay. These are really beautiful. Pull quotes on the second book, Mike Resnick. And then some publisher reviews or industry reviews for A World Too Near, about 423 pages. So those look good. Smell good. I love new book smell. So those are on my shelf. I have A Feast for Crows up here, which it's the fourth in George Martin's Song of Ice and Fire series. Haven't got a chance to get to it because I'm still finishing up Glenn Cook's Omnibus Black Company trilogy. Got The Dead House Gates, Book 2 in the Malazan Book of the Fallen by Stephen Erickson, who is a devotee of Glenn Cook. Writes very similarly for 834 pages for that one in the tradition of good old Robert Jordan. Excuse me. Got two of my five books by Patricia Bray, which I'm taking to have signed by her at Balticon. So anyway, that's my library segment to steal something. And I guess that's going to be that. There's a blog post by Jack Ward, who does the Sonic Society podcast. And that's coming up here in just a minute after this break when we come back. So we'll get to that right after this.
Galactic Wars got you down? Spice Mind Work taking the life out of you? Escape. Treat yourself to a luxurious afternoon or the entire weekend at Dagobah Spa. Mud baths, fog treatments, serene meditation parks. Take a jog around the rainforest, wrestle with snakes, or meet your fate in the tree cave. Come, revive yourself in nature, and live in huts you can't stand up in. Dagobah Spa. It's just what you need. Weapons not allowed. Jedi and Sith always welcome.
Have you ever had one of those days? You know the kind I'm talking about. You assassinate a guy that you're convinced is a demon, only to find out that he isn't. Then you have to go and tell your friends, family, and pastor what you've done, and deal with the repercussions? What? You don't know what that's like? Well, Matt York certainly does. There is a battle being fought in the streets for men's souls, and without knowing it, he has fired the first shot. Come find out what all this is about in the new podcast novel by Scott Roche called Archangel, Valley of the Shadow of Death. You can find it and more at www.spiritualtramp.com. See you there.
Yes, you just did hear me ding in with a USB port there in the middle of the promo. Tough crap. You don't like it? Go listen somewhere else. Oh, ouch. No, really. I mean, you're not too offended, are you, Scott? Sorry about that. Let's see here. Now, I mentioned this blog post from Jack Ward, the host producer of the Sonic Society podcast. Let's see. I'm going to look up his site here real quick because, and I have to go through Twitter to do it. And it, I mean, this is just, this is what my world has become. Centers around Twitter. And while I wait for Twitter to load, I'm going to drink some more of this green tea here. It's the hot green tea because I find that the warmth of the liquid makes the vocal cords soft and supple, flexible. SonicSociety.org? Is that right? Is that right? MySpace.com/SonicSociety if you want to find more about that. There's a couple links there. I'm gonna read this and respond to it as I go because I thought it was really good. There were some parts I disagreed with, but not too vociferously. They are the top 10 podcasting do's and don'ts, and I want to thank Jack Hosley of Wander Radio at wanderradio.com, which is a really good speculative fiction, short fiction podcast / music podcast. Jack is a fairly soft-spoken feller, but he does have good taste in music. So here is Jack Ward. As we complete Season 3 of the Sonic Society, I find myself reflecting back upon the year and also upon a number of things I've learned. Some of these have come from hard looks at myself and how I operate, and some have been precious little lessons people have taught me, sometimes through frustration. I've been tempted on more than one occasion to send an email or message back to some of these kind folk to thank them, but considering I learn, like most human beings, more from the mistakes than from the successes, I figured that might be rather rude. I almost didn't write this a number of times because, quite honestly, who am I? I'm just a fellow podcaster who's learning along the way. I'm reminded by the saying, if you meet Buddha on the road, kill him. I never heard that one. I'm tempted to add the modern expression, if you meet the social media expert on the internet highway, run over him, which I tend to agree with. And this is not directed at any one particular person, at least from my point of view. So let's get to that point. Social media experts. I'm going to go out on the limb and say there aren't any. Just like being a panacea programmer really doesn't exist. Is that right? Okay. Neither do social media experts. Social media includes everything from applications like Facebook and Twitter to blogging, podcasts, news groups, and beyond. You can have a solid experience in one or two fields, but there's just too many specialties out there. You'll never find a lawyer good at everything, and you'll never see me put social media expert on my business card. I do what I do, and there's no way I can tell you that I know everything about podcasting. I won't pretend to. This doesn't mean I'm ignorant, it means I'm focused. Part of my focus involves interviewing and being interviewed, which leads us to the next points. Social media experts, yeah, kind of getting tired of that because it's like saying someone is, I walk into a party and say, I'm an expert at getting to know people at a party. Or I'm an expert at networking at a business event, here's my card. You know, I'm an expert at conversation. Really? It's like I'm an expert at eating hot dogs. I mean, you social media is there to be social. Case in point. A good friend of mine, Jeff Roney, who produced those segments you heard from, they're from his old podcast, Tatooine TV. I will be presenting segments from that parody show here foreseeable future. I've told Jeff, and this is not an indictment against Jeff, it's just a conversation we had. I told him, you know, I think we really need to steer clear from away from using Twitter just as a marketing thing, because it's real easy to get to be busy and get on Twitter and go, oh, check out my new blog podcast, my new blog post, check out my new podcast, check out my this, check out my that, visit here, vote here. Real easy to do that. But it, you know, when you start looking at them as a marketing tool, that's where you get your social media experts. Well, why do we need a social media expert? Because this expert is supposed to help us find some sort of value in it other than just using it to be social. And that's the point of this podcasting and blogging medium. When you start taking yourself too seriously and it becomes, oh, I've got to market myself, I've got to get my name out there. Yes, you do. If you have a voice and you want to be heard, this is what you do. But my approach through this whole thing has always been to make friends, win friends, not necessarily influence people, but that goes into it with the old book, How to Win Friends and Influence People. Excuse me. Good thing I don't have any panels at Balticon. I'm losing my voice already. You know, it's trite. It's abrasive, not abrasive. I don't really know how to put it, but I think you know what I mean. Well, it's just plain wrong to use social media as a marketing ploy only. You know, the temptation was, oh, I got to have a MySpace page. I got to have a Facebook page. I got to have a Flickr page. I got to have a Twitter account. I got to be on Brightkite. Oh, I can't stand Brightkite. I mean, really, the GPS thing and, oh, I'm in this city. Are you in this city? No, because most of the tribe are in different states. I mean, let's look at it this way. T. Morris, Mark Bailey and Heather Welliver, and the Breakalls, Megan and Scott Breakall, they all live in the Northern Virginia area. I could see where there may have some value if they're out somewhere and, oh, I'm right there, T. But, sorry. If you really want to go meet T, you call him up on the cell phone. Hey, where are you? What I'm getting tired of is seeing on Twitter, I'm at blah, 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 some odd road, Indianapolis, Indiana, zip code. I don't care what street address you're at. When did it become the norm to say in Twitter, I'm at this street address? I mean, what if somebody really is stalking you? You're going to give up your privacy like that? And second of all, it's just annoying seeing all these little tweets on there. Use Brightkite for Brightkite, but why does Brightkite have to invade Twitter? Because if you're using Twitter, you know, if you're using Twitter, you're either on your computer or you're getting tweets on a cell phone. And if you're getting tweets on a cell phone, you're probably out going somewhere. And if you're out at the grocery store, you're probably not just out going, gee, I hope somebody bright kites me so I can figure out where they are. I mean, really? So I don't get the whole appeal of bright kite. But J.C. Hutchins said something on Twitter today that was very apropos. He said, you know, you tend to find that all these social media sites are all the same thing. Just people redoing the same thing over and over and over. And J.C. is one of these guys that's a real believer in social media. But J.C. does it right. And Scott Sigler does it right. And T. Morris does it right. We're all part of a tribe. We're all part of a crew. That's the point. And I'm very thankful to Jack Ward for saying this. Number two, if you're going to be interviewed in a podcast, know something about the podcast and the interviewer involved. It takes little time to download someone else's podcast and listen to them. Listen to the tone of their podcast. Are they upbeat or relaxed? Do they have a specialized theme or is it a free-for-all? Will you be expected to be an expert or a fun personality? I've had guests who knew nothing of my show and they admitted it, or worse, still pretended they knew something and were woefully unprepared to answer questions when I referred to things in the interview. Everyone wants to be important in this medium, even in their own little corner. Take the time to make your host feel important by knowing a little bit about what they do. Nothing makes an interviewer more at ease than saying, yes, I love your show, my favorite moment was, and mean it. You know, I don't know if I agree entirely with this. When you are being interviewed, the interviewer has solicited you to be on their show. That means they follow you. When I interviewed T, I didn't expect that T. Morris would have to go listen to my show to know what it was about, because T. Morris is T. Morris. I can see where, you know, if it's a kind of a mellow podcast, let's say you're going to be interviewed by George Crabb on the Geologic Podcast. You know, George is a little crazy, gets a little wild, and you're going to be a little more free. Let's say, conversely, I can't remember his name. This is really killing me. Stephen Ewan Cobb. Let's say you're on Stephen Ewan Cobb's The Future in You, which Paul Fisher was recently on there, of the ADD cast. You know it's going to be more analytical, more even-keeled. So, yeah, I can see that point. Kind of be familiar with who is interviewing you. Yes. But you don't need to necessarily be too prepared, because you're not interviewing them, they're interviewing you. And I'm not saying be self-important. I'm just saying understand if you're being interviewed, they've asked you to be interviewed. But certainly if you're going to be the interviewer, you definitely need to be prepared. You definitely don't want to go into an interview being unprepared about the person you're trying to interview. I think one of the problems, too much, if you pay too much attention to the tone and the whatever of the tenor of someone's podcast, you can maybe not be yourself, which I think is also a danger. Pause for tea. And I don't mean Morris. Number three, don't name drop in the interview, as I drop names. Shannon, God bless her, spent nearly an hour cutting out every sentence that name-dropped famous podcasters in one interview. She cut the interview down from over 30 minutes to just 10. I kid you not. I'm tired of hearing the usual suspects of Hall of Fame podcasters in every podcast. I truly am. If you're going to name-drop, make sure it's relevant to your projects, not I was talking to, or so-and-so and I were hanging out, and if you must name-drop or give a shout-out to a hero, try to pick someone new to the landscape, someone most people haven't had a chance to listen to. Share the love, don't build on your reputation. And I can totally see that, because this goes back to the discussions about pod taint from Jack Mangan. You know, it's real easy to start hero worshiping in this medium. It's real easy to start looking at J.C. Hutchins like, oh, it's J.C. Hutchins. Oh my gosh. Oh, it's Scott Sigler. Oh, it's T. Morris. T, unfortunately, well, maybe not unfortunately, fortunately, is enough of a goofball and a gregarious fellow that he's not going to allow himself to do that. He might come across that way, but he's really not going to allow himself to do that. We can start believing in our own self-importance, and I just moved it away from what I was looking at so I could... Name-dropping, yeah. And don't pretend like dropping the name of a famous podcaster is going to somehow make you more important. We're just podcasters. We're not getting paid to do this. Now, JC and some people have some advertising, you know, that's fine. And JC's getting paid to actually write a book, not necessarily podcast his podcast. Or Scott Sigler, you know, he's getting paid to write, not podcast. He does have GoDaddy as a sponsor sometimes, and that's fine. That's uber cool. But don't be like, oh, Scott Sigler is a personal friend of mine. I mean, that's just silly. Keep your interviews as tight as possible. This is the radio geek in me. I admit there are a few exceptions where conversation is the theme of the entire podcast and someone turns on the microphone and things let fly. Usually liquor of some sort is involved. If, however, you're invited on a show that has a set time frame and a specific theme that is not just shooting the stink, so to speak, it behooves interviewee and interviewer to understand the constraints and time elements. As a rule, don't say in an hour what can be said in 20 minutes. Don't say in 20 minutes what can be said in 10. Don't say in 10 what can be done in 5. And if your interviews are clocking past an hour, you really need to work on making it easier for your editor, usually yourself. Which brings us to the next point. But before we get to the next point, I just want to say, you know, Rich and I talked for a long time, and I was able to make 3 podcast episodes out of it. That's 3 straight weeks where I had something for people. And, of course, I edited it for content, being useful, interesting, and hilarious. Excuse me, pause for tea. Or as Jack Mangan likes to say, mouse click. Yeah. You know, definitely pay attention to that. But, you know, the time constraints of a show. But yeah, it really was. On this show, it's really just about shooting the stink, so to speak. There tends to be a focus, but I like to allow for tangents and things, just sort of get the interview guest talking about stuff and not just rehashing, you know, the same old stuff that people say. You know, I don't want to be the Dragon Page. I don't want to be Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing. I'm the Adventures of Indiana Jim, and I like to talk, and I like to get people talking. And I know he wasn't really talking about me, but I'm just interjecting here. Collaborate on the interview beforehand. Figuring out what you're going to talk about, what the focus is. Yeah, kind of the same thing. That can be beneficial, again, if you have time constraints, really, is more where that's going to come in. Tit for tat is all that. Many times, the person being involved in my world is a fellow podcaster, a fellow writer, or a fellow actor or producer. If they approach you for the interview, I don't think it's bad form to ask for something in return. And if someone doesn't ask something of you, take the time to ask them. If you're a podcaster yourself, return the favor. Invite them on your show. Find an excuse to bring them. Not only will you make them feel that they are appreciated, but wanted. Playing someone's promo is a good start, but really, if someone interviewed you and you just played their promo, are you really doing them a service? If you're running a pod novel, have them take a small role or read from your preview. Include them. Don't make them feel like they are helping you to fame, and they should be lucky to do so. Maybe. You know, there could be... If I was interviewing Mike Stackpole, I know the guy is so busy that I'm not necessarily going to ask him to come be a part of my show so you don't feel like I'm using you as a springboard. We're all using each other, essentially. You know, that's the whole point of you bring on guests that you think your listeners want to hear in the hopes that your audience is going to grow. It's just a natural thing. You know, you don't invite guests thinking, nobody's going to listen. I may say that because I'm self-deprecating, but you know, you do that because you have a feeling that having this person on your show is going to help you. It's part of the point of producing content that people will find interesting. That's my point. I mean, yeah, you're not just looking for guys, oh, this guy's going to help me get ahead. You know, oh, I'm going to get listeners from this. But, you know, I knew having Rich on, excuse me, wow, would help me get listeners. But primarily, I wanted to talk to him about promotion, because I thought it was an apropos topic. But Rich and I, we had already met at Con Carolinas last year. I know that if I have Scott Sigler on my show, I'm going to get hits. I'm going to be interviewing Patricia Bray live at Balticon, and hopefully also Joshua Palmateer, both authors, both relatively new, but mostly because I find them interesting people. But I hope that people will see that and go, oh, I'd like to hear that. I'm going to be cross-breeding, cross-pollinating. A truncated interview will go, hopefully, to the Dragon Page cover to cover, and a longer one will go to Adventures in Sci-Fi Publishing. So it's kind of, we're all helping each other. Yes, I understand that that's helping me, and they understand that I'm helping them, because I'm giving them more authors, more author interviews. So it is kind of a tit-for-tat thing, but it's also, it's a mutual understanding that we all benefit from that sort of thing. Okay, we're going to go to another promo. We're going to kind of take a break from this. And when we come back, we'll finish the second half and beat our hasty retreat out of here.
How would you like to make extra money? Work your own hours, be your own boss. Your key to economic freedom is building DS Construction's Death Star.
Death Star.
As you know, the Empire is expanding their reach farther by the day, and there's nothing we can do about it. So if you can't beat them, join them. If you have some spare time, a lot of Geonosian friends, and our plans, you'll be on the road to wealth and happiness. You may say, the Empire already has the Death Star. Why would they need another? But controlling the galaxy is a big job. And if one Death Star is good, 300 more is better. Listen to one of our most successful customers.
Well, I tell you, I built my first Death Star myself, and three wives, and 20 years later, it was done. It felt so good to realize that my sweating and hard work would lead to planets being destroyed in all points of the galaxy. I'm building another one right now, but these Geonosians keep hiding in the shadows and jumping out scaring me. I may have to get some Imperial help. But if you see a green beam coming towards your planet, think of me.
Oh, yes. Call today and we'll add a Geonosian language dictionary with every order. That's DS Construction.
Hello, this is J.C. Hutchins speaking.
Fuck you, Hutchins.
Well, hey, Sigler. Gosh, how's it going? Gee, I hope you're well.
I'm not fucking well. I'm fucking annoyed.
Well, golly, why is that?
The nominations for the Parsec Awards are coming up again.
Gosh, the Parsec Awards? You mean those Neato Keen Awards given to the year's best speculative fiction podcasts?
Yeah, that's right. The fucking Parsec Awards. Anyone can nominate their favorite podcast at www.parsecawards.com. The winners are announced at DragonCon in Atlanta, August 29th through September 1st.
Well, holy cow. When's the deadline to nominate stuff?
The nominations close at midnight on June 15th. The stories themselves had to have run between May 1st, 2007 and April 30th, 2008. Whatever kind of podcast, fiction, story, whatever people like, they can just go to ParsecAwards.com and fucking vote for it.
Wowie! Boy, I bet the Parsec Awards will really have some keen categories this year.
They've got fucking dozens of fucking categories, like best fucking short story, best fucking novella, and best motherfucking long form fiction, which is that thing that you and I do.
What? They have an award for what we do?
Fucking ain't right they do. Best long form fiction, which means best novel.
But you've never won a Parsec.
No shit, you fucking jet age genius. Neither of you.
Well, the Parsec Awards.
Whoa.
Fuck them right in their cornhole motherfucking shitting ears.
That's what I'm saying.
Stupid aardvark sucking, dick licking, camel fucking, shit sucking ass wipes. I swear the next time I fucking hear about one of those goddamn things, I'll put that little statuette where the fucking sun don't shine.
Take a Prozac.
Shit sucking ass motherfucking, dick sucking, toilet paper roll.
Kiss your mom
fucking,
with that mouth?
Dick licking, shitting cunt burgers.
Jeez, dude. Take it easy. It's just an award.
Gosh, wowie, that promo. Gosh, that's hilarious. Sigler and Hutchins, they're so creative. They're so funny. They're so vulgar. Oh, my goodness gracious me. Man, okay. So, yeah, go over to ParsecAwards.com. See what's available to nominate. See what's already submitted for nomination. Nominate your own podcasting self in there. Yeah, okay. Number 7 from Jack Warden. Point number 7. Never send a friend a form letter or to anyone. Nothing shows you don't care more than a form letter. If you have to send a form letter, then at least add specific information to the letter about the people and their podcast so that it doesn't sound like a form letter. Be aware that many podcasts have more than one host. Even if you're friends with that host, include everyone involved in the podcast. It may take some more time, but no one wants to be just a rung to someone else's success. Be gracious and realize the people you're soliciting for help are just as busy as you and just want to be part of the family. Not part of your team, part of the family. That's an important distinction. Remember, the community is based on the relationships you've built. If you don't know the people you want to be involved with, are they really the people you want to be involved with? I know from personal experience that the slightest misstep can ruin friendships and break up allies. It's important to try to be as professional and yet as humble as possible. Yes and no on point number 7. J.C. Hutchins regularly sends things out when he's got something going on that, you know, he changes the name, but pretty sure everybody gets the same text in there. But, you know, the thing is, we know JC means it. We know that JC's going to be there to help because he's done it before. I don't feel offended that JC sends me a letter that looks the same. I'm honored that he thinks of me to send it to me. You know, I'm very happy about that. And that makes me feel like a part, just because it's not a personalized letter. I mean, the dude doesn't have time to write a personalized email to every single person he's going to send out his new promo for Obsidian, say. When I've created a new promo, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send an email to all my podcaster friends, say, hey, I've got a new promo, you know, and send me yours. Let's swap. But I don't think people really take that as a form letter. It's just, it's a mass email to everybody. I don't feel offended when someone sends something legitimate like that. I mean, if it's just a self-promotional ploy, yeah, that comes off wrong. But in podcasting, it's understood that it's an exchange game. And maybe it's not understood that it's an exchange game, and maybe JC knows that I understand that it's an exchange game, that it's, you know, let's help each other. And, you know, I'm cool with that. That's fine. But really, you know, you do want to be careful not to spam, but I also think there's a lot of people who are a little too sensitive. And sometimes maybe it's the other way around. Maybe we're taking ourselves so seriously that we think we're above receiving a letter, a form letter. You know, if there's information in it that I find useful, guess what? I don't care. Most of the time, form letters are information that I don't find useful. And that's the problem. You know, it's like people say, well, I'm not signed on to your newsletter thing. But if you're a podcaster, you understand how it works. You understand how valuable time is, and you need to save those steps. And I just think each situation provides its own challenges, and you have to think it through first. That's the key. You have to think it through. Number 8, sincerity is the hardest thing to fake. Darn right. I love audio drama. I'm an omnivore. I eat up all kinds, good, bad, and indifferent. I burned off 50 gigs of audio works just in the past 3 months, and I do this every 3 months. I'm passionate about this stuff. It juices me like almost nothing else, with writing itself coming in first place. I hope people can hear the sincerity in my voice when I talk about this passion of mine, because I'm very grateful and will be eternally so to the things I do, to do the things I do. Getting any kind of positive reinforcement from our listeners is simply the icing on the cake for me. I really am touched by their love of this medium, and I don't know what we'd do without the folks who let us know every day how they feel. But the truth is, I'd do this if it were just Shannon and myself as the only people who knew about it. Be sincere in all your dealings. The great Peter Gzowski once said in the documentary The Family about CBC that he became a good interviewer by finding something interesting in everyone he interviewed. Sometimes it wouldn't work, and in those cases, he faked being interested. But what he found was that in feigning interest, he actually often became interested despite himself. Once again, take the focus off of you and really be interested in those around you. Ask yourself how you can help someone who helps you. Phone into their voicemail once in a while. Write them that email to let them know you listen to their show. Give them some of the time back they give you for listening to your show or talking with you every week. Last point is going to be about hubris. Okay, number 8. Yeah, I totally, totally agree with this. Absolutely. Sincerity definitely is the hardest thing to fake, and there are some people that fake it, and there's some people that mean it. I frankly like to think I mean it. There's not really much more you can say, but yeah, we as podcasters starving for feedback, and I know the majority of my listeners are podcasters. I don't get much feedback. Pause for small violins playing in the background. Excuse me while I drink some tea spiked with vodka. I feel an Anchorman Jones coming on. Jim, you ignorant slut, as Rich would say. We definitely need to keep giving each other feedback back and forth, because it's the only thing that keeps us going, is knowing what people think and knowing that people are listening. If you Google yourself regularly, you'll go blind. I apparently haven't read the entire thing. I've seen many folks on Twitter complain that their name only reaches 2 or 7 when they hit Google. Life's too short, folks. As long as you're on the first page, you're doing awesome. If you're not, you will be. A casual Google of Sonic Society in various iterations gets some interesting results. Just don't be blinded to the truth. The truth is to focus more on your content and less on the results. If you build an amazing podcast and do all the things you should be doing, they will come. I honestly don't even check my podcast statistics even monthly. Perhaps I should, but I don't need the stress. Most of the time, I forget about them. I won't when I'm monetizing, but for the meantime, I want to focus on my viewers, not my own gratification at the numbers game. He's absolutely right. You know, you cannot get swallowed up in the numbers or you're going to get depressed. When you're starting out, man, you'll start off slow. I'm at 130 subscribers and I've been doing this for 2.5 years. Really? No, wait. 2 years? Two years. Almost two and a half. Since April, well, maybe it is. No, April, May, June. Yeah, duh, it's 1 month from April, doofus. Okay, 2 years and 2 months. But, you know, and 170 subscribers about. I feel good. I feel like I'm doing awesome. You know, I've had I had 1,000 hits already, or 1,000 downloads already just this month. I'm freaking ecstatic. You know, that rarely happens. You know, it's a spike, man. It's a spike, but, you know, I don't count on it. I just Googled myself yesterday for the first time in several months. You know, I don't do it often. I just was curious. I was like, oh, I wonder what it's at. Oh, there it is. I was 1, 2, 3, 7, 8, 9. You know, I was right up there. So, but I mean, really, honestly, how many people are going to go Indiana Jim in their Google? I mean, really, how many? If they've heard my name, they've probably heard my website and they could probably just go right there. So, you know, I'm not really under any delusions that anybody's going to be Googling Indiana Jim or the combination of the words Indiana and Jim together for some reason. Number 10, work hard, play hard, have fun. This is a no-brainer. I'm not saying if it gets tough, quit. I'm the last one to believe that. I'm saying let it get tough and have fun along the way. Too many podcasters fade because they get all excited their first dozen episodes and then let their attitudes and minds fly to other shiny keys. Well, I did read this one. Maybe I didn't read the other one. The superstars in my mind are those folks who do what they do, like the little engine that could, chugging along week after week, and then the next thing you know, they've got 5,000 listeners each podcast because they focus on that one thing they do to make people happy. The Wards have a number of sayings. One is, you can do anything you want except strike a match on a bar of soap. Now, is that supposed to be deep, or am I really overthinking that? Another is simply, you work hard and you play hard. The unwritten rule is, you have fun in all parts of the process. When I sit down and write, no matter how hard the problem, I love it. When I sit down and edit, unless I'm rushed, I actually really enjoy it. It's important to be in the moment and appreciate it when it comes, because if you don't, its time will pass and you'll not even have the fond memories of its passing. And that's just my top 10 list. Do with it as you will. Just don't run over me on the internet highway. Come up with your own. Yeah. You know? I can't disagree with that either. I really can't. I'm really glad he posted that because, you know, it's got a lot of great points in it. And it also gave me lots of content here. Okay, so a few words about good old Balticon in Baltimore, Maryland, Hunt Valley, Maryland. I'm going. It is Friday through Monday. My schedule is in front of me. I'll get there Friday around noon. The first panel that I'm interested in is New Media and Copyright, What You Need to Know, at 7 p.m. in Salon F. So I've got 7 hours to get to the hotel. It's about an hour-long light rail ride from the airport. May stop and see the sights, see Camden Yards, take some pictures. Maybe not. I don't know. It depends. So I got plenty of time to get there. And then the New Media meet and greet is Friday at 11 p.m. Be there or be square if you're going. Saturday, full slate on Saturday. Only a few slots for lunch and dinner and things. The Survival Guide to Writing Fantasy live at 8 p.m. on Saturday in the Chesapeake Room. That's looking good. Patricia Bray signing is at the same time as the live calls for Cthulhu in the Chesapeake Room. Patricia Bray will be signing books in the lobby. I'll probably be in the lobby. Sunday, Stranger Things premiere, noon, 12 p.m. in the Valley Ballroom in the lower level. Earl Newton and Rich Siegfried presenting. Should be an exciting event. Everyone will be there. And then after that, somewhere between 1 and 6, will be the grand New Media exodus to the theater to see Indiana Jones 4. I know, I'm going, Rich is going, the Breakalls are going, T. Morris is going, Patricia Bray is going, Joshua Palmentier probably going, I think. There's going to be a lot of people going, I believe, and hopefully everyone will get there, be able to do it. And 8 p.m. Sunday, live Mr. Adventure, which I will be happy to be a part of. And Monday, of course, the con basically closes down at like 5 o'clock, and I have to be leaving on a jet plane at 5:18, so I'll be leaving the con area at probably 2 o'clock, so right after Reinventing the Myth with Tom Doyle. And so, wow, it's over already? Jeez. Okay, well, that's kind of the highlights of the schedule, and, you know, it should be fun. Something's supposed to play there. Wow, this thing is slow. But yeah, I'm excited. I'm kind of nervous because I usually get nervous meeting people that I've only heard by voice. And, oh, that's what you look like. Man, am I disappointed. But I'm Indiana Jim, the least disappointing podcaster in the world, maybe. So I'm going to have a lot of fun. Everybody's going to have fun. Fun will be had. Much fun. Much, much fun. So anyway, that's enough out of me. You listen to the man, hear how to send your feedback. I hope you get to listen to this on the way to Balticon.
You've been listening to The Adventures of Indiana Jim, a production of Visionary Creative Works. Visit podcast.indianajim.net and leave comments on the blog. Send in your emails and audio feedback to podcast@indianajim.net. I'm Dr. John Small. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.
Now, Jazla gets you to the new frontiers of radio automation.
The new frontiers of radio automation.
Bring your station into the new age of music and let Jazla do the rest. Jazla, the leading radio automation software.